Hey guys, I'm so glad you're here. You're listening to the Efficiency Bee podcast, where we focus our time, money, and energy on all the right things to enjoy our bold, balanced, and blessed lives. I'm your host, Melissa Leone. I'm on a mission to redefine feminism and, dare I say, end it. You've heard of a busy bee, a honey bee, a queen bee? This is Efficiency Bee.
Hey, 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 everybody. How's it going today? My name is Melissa Leone. I'm your host of the Efficiency Bee podcast. Today, I have Becky Easton with me. She is founder and managing attorney at Easton Law, where they focus on estate and business planning. And I don't know if you heard me right, but I said estate and business planning. Like, who knows what that means? So we're going to find out right now. Hi, Becky.
Hello. Hello. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm excited that you said yes. Thank you so much.
Of course. Of course. Yeah, man. I think we all have, you know, all kinds of ideas as to what, you know, estate and business planning means. And it always sounds like it's for people with millions, yep. Right?
That's what I hear when I hear estate. I hear like bajillions of dollars.
Right, right. Getting your affairs in order at the end of your life, you know.
It's typically how a murder mystery thing starts, isn't it? Like,
right.
I don't know. Yeah.
With the reading of the will.
Exactly, exactly, exactly. That's what I picture when I hear that.
Just bring the family together.
Yes. Well, I was hoping you would talk a little bit about both estate and business planning and, you know, just kind of fill in the gaps for what that means.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I mean, estate planning is important for everyone at some level from the day you turn 18. And we start there because at that point in time, you're an adult. And so your parents can't speak for you anymore. Mm-hmm. Like before you were an adult, your parents by default got to make those decisions for you. They were, you know, if you have a bank account, they're probably on it with you, probably had to be on it with you. You know, any sort of healthcare decisions, you know, they are there signing as your guardian and everything. And, excuse me. And so, but, you know, as soon as you become an adult, then they're not that default person anymore, you know? And so if you haven't made any sort of decisions regarding that as, you know, a college age person, someone who's just turned 18, it can be a little bit more difficult.
So what do you mean by that? Like, so if I'm 19 and I go into the hospital, I'm in a car accident and I'm unconscious. Nobody can make a decision for my healthcare?
Not necessarily. Hmm. And so also you would have the people that they would ask. So let's say you're 19 and you're estranged from your family and you have moved across the country. You personally don't want anything to do with your family. Hmm. And you're in an accident. They're able to identify, you know, who your parents are. Your parents come in. You're in a coma. No one knows what sort of decisions you want made. And your parents come in and make the decisions that they feel are best. But, you know, again, in this scenario, you're estranged from your family and you don't want anything to do with them. Mm-hmm. And yet here they are because the law says that they should be the ones making decisions for you. You're not married. You know, you haven't designated anybody else in writing. Then, you know, they get to make the decisions. Because that's what the law has said, you know, so with that in mind, putting that down in writing is important, you know, yeah. And saying what you want to happen, you know, I mean, example is getting a little dated now, but, you know, Terri Schiavo, that was a case where, you know, she was in an accident, she was in a coma. And it actually dragged on for 12 years.
Wow.
12 years that they kept her alive on machines, spending, you know, spending that money, spending those hospital bills, all because, you know, her husband, she didn't put anything in writing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, her husband and her had discussions. The family stepped in and said, oh, no, that's definitely not what she ever would have wanted. And they ended up in a 12-year fight before they ultimately pulled the plug.
Yeah.
You know, which was in allegedly what she wanted to begin with.
Crazy.
So, you know, so right?
Estate planning has to do with medical decisions, right? What else does it have to do with?
Right. Yeah. So it starts there, right? It starts with your incapacity planning as soon as you're 18. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're incapacitated, we want someone to be able to access your finances to be able to pay for things for you, pay your bills, even, you know, you don't want to get kicked out of your house because you're in a coma.
Right.
And to access, you know, your finances and have access to the, or I'm sorry, rather your medical information, have access to that, be able to make those those decisions. And then you step up from that. And as just, we'll say, still a single person, you don't have any kids, you know, what happens with your stuff, right? You know, you might not care, you're going to be dead.
Right.
But I mean, you still have stuff. And, you know, let's say at this point you have been working for a little while and you have a, you know, you have a little bit of a 401k, but, you know, again, you know, here maybe you didn't list a beneficiary or, you know, you listed an ex-girlfriend, any number of people you could have put on there. You pass away and then it could end up going to someone that you didn't want it to go to. Or if you don't have the appropriate beneficiary, or even let's just talk about like your bank accounts, right? You pass away, that's in your personal name. If you didn't tell anyone in a legal document where you wanted that to go, then we get to go to the court and figure out where it goes. So again,
putting your family who's already in pain through a lot more pain.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, I mean, that's a big chunk of it. And then also, you know, again, in this scenario where you're estranged from your family and you don't want them to get anything and you've really pulled yourself up by your bootstraps and made something of yourself and, you know, you pass away and your parents are the next in line for that by law, you know, they may end up with money that you didn't want them to have.
Yeah, interesting.
I mean, a lot of things you don't necessarily always think about, or even as a younger person, you know, you're like, who needs that? Like, I don't have enough.
My husband and I just went through, I think what you would call estate planning about this time last year. It was, we had started like talking about it prior to COVID, but then COVID really kind of was like, oh shit, like we got to do some stuff here. We don't have tons of money. So it felt a little like, is this the right thing for us to do? But we own a home and we own cars, right? And then we have three kids. So what happens to the kids? What happens to our 401k? What happens to our money after we're gone? Who makes decisions? Like it's a really hard conversation to have.
Absolutely.
With your partner, but also to yourself. Like just thinking about it yourself is like, it feels weird.
Yeah, I totally get it. I mean, and on a very practical level, I think the hardest question when I'm sitting down talking to someone, you know, discussing, just informing anyone about the estate planning process, probably the worst question if you have kids is like on a practical level, if you don't make it home tonight, what happens?
Yeah.
100%. Where do they go? Who steps up and takes care of your kids? And on another level, like, do you want that person who would probably step up to take care of your kids? Do you want them raising your kids? I mean, sometimes the answer is fine.
Yeah.
Right. You know, you're like, oh yeah, no, my family's great, but is your family great?
Well, we had like, we went through all these different things. Like, okay, would we want our kids to go to one of our sets of parents? Well, if we're gone on vacation for a week, hell yeah, we want them to go with their grandparents. But do we want our kids to lose their parents and then essentially almost lose their grandparents because their grandparents become their parents? And is that right? So then we went back to the drawing board and said, okay, who is similar to us in age and style, who we trust implicitly with our human beings? And then what really got me, Becky, was I had to come up with a backup because what if they're not still together or unwilling or able? And my mind was like, what? I have to pick two?
Wait a minute.
And it's so intense and so intimidating. Now I know why I put it off for so long, but I also have felt this huge, like bigger than I could have imagined, sense of relief that it's in writing, that I'm still confident in my decisions, and that it's all good. So we ended up with, you know, my brother taking care of money, my sister taking care of my personal medical decisions if I was just like in a coma, and then some friends taking the kids. Because to think that one human being could handle all three of those things in a time of crisis is kind of unrealistic too. So, yeah. I mean, wow, what a like, I can't believe you do this for a living with people, because it was an intense experience.
I don't disagree at all. I mean, there's a lot to think about and a lot that, you know, you haven't thought about. And you know, through no fault of your own, you know, we don't teach everybody to think about estate planning and, you know, making all those financial decisions and everything. Like, we don't train that. And I think in large part, just as a society, we're kind of afraid of death. We don't want to talk about it. Yeah. We think we're going to, you know, live forever.
Yeah, but truth is we're not going to.
I know.
It's not,
I know.
It's not a thing.
yeah. And, you know, if we can do, so I think that's one place where I try to step in and bring a little bit of, you know, humor to it where I can.
Yeah.
You know, it's not always possible. We are talking about deep subjects.
Yeah.
Everyone's situation is a little bit different. And, you know, so there are heavy things that are happening in everybody's life. And so I see all kinds of emotion pop up around all kinds of different questions, you know, so it's not, yeah, everybody's story is different. And so I think that might be what fascinates me the most.
Can you talk a little bit about the difference between estate planning and a trust? Is that the same?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, absolutely. So building up, we talked a little bit about incapacity planning with your powers of attorney, and then using a will to say what you want to happen to anything that's in your personal name. And then when you build up from that with a trust, it's like building a business for your life. And so you have that trust agreement or your operating agreement for your life that says, you know, what happens to all the stuff? If I'm incapacitated, how do we manage this? When I die, how do we manage this? And allows you to have that additional say. And I mean, even if we step back a little bit and kind of talk about business planning in the same token, right? So we're talking about your operating agreement. What happens when you as a business owner, you know, are incapacitated? What happens when you die? How do you sell? How do you get out of this? You know, how do you admit new members? And so your trust agreement is really doing the exact same thing for your life.
Yeah.
And so what is it that happens when the bad things happen? It's not if.
Right.
It's when.
No, you're totally right. It is when, because,
you know,
we all will die one day.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes I feel like Oprah, you know, pointing at people being like, you're going to die. And you're going to die. And I'm going to die. And we're all going to die, Melissa. I'm going to die. So
that's awesome. Could you do a commercial like that?
I know.
So funny.
Yeah.
I like it.
So again, there's that humor, right?
Yep, I like it. So one of the things that I think I learned correctly, now you're going to have to keep me honest here, with the trust was that it also helps make decisions. My husband and I are married and alive today. And if I pass away tomorrow and he gets remarried a year from now, his new wife can't change our trust of what we set up while I was alive as well.
You can set it up that way, or you can at least set it up in part that way. So,
because whoever the hell he marries after me is going to suck. I already know it.
Right. Yeah. She is. You know, I mean, you want her to be cool, but she's not going to be nearly as cool as you.
That's kind of what I'm thinking.
But yeah, I mean, and again, that's one of the beauties about working with a trust, mm-hmm. is because you can implement that additional, you know, control or protection or, you know, safety for your children, mm-hmm. Into that. Whereas, you know, with a will, you just can't, because everything goes, you know, probably everything would go to your husband, mm-hmm. and then we're just, you know, we're pretty sure your husband's going to take care of his own children. But
yeah,
you know, we've all heard plenty of stories. They get remarried and, mm-hmm. You know, everything to the new wife, and it gets blown, and, you know, then dad, you know, you die, you're then the husband dies, but then everything of his goes to the new spouse, and, you know, somehow the children have completely gotten cut out, you know, which no one ever would have intended, probably not even your husband.
Correct. No, I agree. And when crazy things happen, people act crazy. So it just kind of helps everybody, when they're in sound mind, right, to make smart decisions that are thoughtful and planned, so that when the craziness of life starts to happen, no one's making rash decisions. And that's kind of what helped us make the decision to move forward. Because at first we thought, okay, we're both, I'm not 40 yet, I'll be 40 next week, but he was 40 last year. And it was like, okay, we're still young and we're both healthy. Do we really need to do this right now? We don't have billions of dollars. We don't even have millions of dollars. We don't even have hundreds of thousands of dollars. So, you know, it was like, do we really need to do this? And man, I feel so much better knowing that it's here. And I've got like the docs in a fireproof bag in my closet. I have no reason to open them again. But I know that it's there. And if the worst happens, my family will know what to do next.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, and to step up from that, I mean, you've just done it last year, so you probably haven't had too many changes go on. Although, you know, I mean, COVID, we had all kinds of changes happen this year. Do want to pull it out, you know, every few years, because something has happened in your life, and it's always a good idea just to touch it and see what you said and be like, oh, yep. Still, everything's still passing the correct way.
Right.
You know, double checking your accounts. Did you open a new bank account? Mm-hmm. You need to make sure that account has, you know, a payable on death beneficiary on there, or did you open it correctly in the name of the trust, if you have a trust, and little things like that, that I think estate planning typically gets a really transactional rap. You know, you set it and forget it, you know, you've done it, you get that, you know, sense of relief, you check that box off your to-do list, and you're like, all right, sweet, did it. But then your life changes. Or, I mean, my grandma is a good example of that. She had a trust. We all knew that the trust existed, but there was nothing in it. She had never funded it with any accounts. My mom was an only child, and so it didn't make too much of a difference in the long run, because she was on a bunch of the accounts and things like that. But she spent a lot of money with someone back, you know, many, many years ago, and didn't do anything for her.
Interesting.
And so, I mean, that's a really common thing too.
Yeah.
You know, quite frequently, you know, your attorney will take care of, you know, the deed to your personal house, because that's a big thing that's fairly easy to help fund as, you know, an attorney. And then they just give you a little note that says, by the way, make sure you do all this other stuff. If you don't, your trust probably isn't going to work. And then you either do that or you don't. And then your trust either works for you or it doesn't.
Interesting.
When the time comes.
So how do I check that I did everything I was supposed to do?
It, at least as far as, you know, our initial kind of process for working with us involves going through an inventory and creating just an inventory of those accounts, all your bank accounts, you know, your mortgage, your deed, and knowing where everything is, knowing who the beneficiaries are, who, how the account is titled, who the beneficiaries are on there. And it, just so you know, I mean, that is a huge step in and of itself. Let's say you were going to do no further estate planning and you just got that inventory together. That's really going to help. Mm-hmm. You know, that will help, you know, me as your heir to, because otherwise, you know, things just get lost.
Yeah.
There's no way for me to know where to look for a 401k from your first job.
Yeah, that's very true.
You know?
Yeah, I think I have like $2,000 in a random bank somewhere from my first job out of college.
Right?
Just sitting there and no one would probably, it's $2,000, but still it's $2,000, right? Like,
yeah. Yeah, you know, I mean, yeah. And then that'll help someone. That would help pay a little bit towards, you know, your funeral and last expenses if they needed it.
Well, money starts getting dispersed like as you start having kids. So we put money aside in a 529 account for their college mm-hmm. education. We put money aside in a health savings account that we don't touch. We're just trying to let it grow so that, you know, when I have to pay for three sets of braces, I've got money.
Right.
And it would be really easy to lose track of that. Even if I passed, my husband would probably not even know where to go because I've managed it all.
Yep.
And, you know, as an accountant and as an efficiency bitch, I am like really good at knowing where all that stuff is, but
right.
I've never told him. <'Cause>
And that's so common from one side or the other.
Yeah,
right. Sure. You know, the husband has done everything. He's worked, they've had the stay-at-home mom who's raised the kids.
Yeah.
He's handled all the finances and all the everything.
Yeah.
And then he has a heart attack and dies.
Mm-hmm.
And the wife doesn't know where to go. She doesn't know the first thing about how to log into anything
yeah.
or find any of those accounts.
Yeah.
And I mean, similarly on the other side with you, you know, you have just taken on your background is finance. Mm-hmm. Why would you not run the finances of your family?
Right. Yeah, I always have. It's my job for a living. So
right. It's easy for you, yeah. You know? So, you know, something happens to you. It's similar in my house. There are certain things that, you know, my husband just wouldn't know where to find.
Yep. Yeah. Interesting. Okay.
So really, yeah. I mean, the first step is just make an inventory of the accounts. And where they are, who has what, who those beneficiaries are.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a trust, you know, you don't necessarily want to have any minor children listed as even contingent beneficiaries,
mm-hmm.
because again, that's kind of defeating the purpose of building that trust and having that additional control and protection afterwards, because it would just go straight to them. Mm-hmm. Assuming they were over 18, right? You know, under 18, it gets stuck, caught up in probate court with a conservator and a guardian.
Sounds like a mess.
Lots of fees and...
Yeah, and then you waste all your money. You waste all the money that somebody could have had in all of those court fees, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I know probate, like it gets a bad rap for many reasons. I think everybody's heard of some horror story about probate, mm-hmm. either from their friends or their own experiences. And, you know, it doesn't have to be that bad, but ultimately you're looking at, you know, something that's going to be a year or more of your life.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to cost you, you know, upwards of 5% of your assets is a pretty conservative amount.
Wow.
That you would pay when all's said and done. And then also it's a public process,
mm-hmm.
you know? So, I mean, any sort of court document that you file, anyone can go in. I was about to say I can go in, but there's nothing special about me.
Mm-hmm.
You can go in. The person down the street can pull it up and see who, you know, what you had when you died, who your beneficiaries were, and what the division was. And so that's where we end up, you know, with con men and women who show up out of the blue and steal your new inheritance from you.
Crazy. So right. What is a ballpark estimate of investment, both time and money, for somebody to set up estate planning?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all of our planning at Easton Law is done on a flat fee basis. So it's something that you're going to you know, review and choose before we ever move forward. I hate surprises. I hate billing hourly if I can avoid it.
Yeah.
I want you to call in and ask me questions. Mm-hmm. You know, we're building a relationship here. You know, you should feel comfortable, you know, coming and asking your questions and not worrying that I'm going to send you a bill for $67.50 next month.
Right.
Because we talked for 15 minutes.
The hourly is kind of an old school way. Yeah.
It is. I mean, it certainly still has its place mm-hmm. in certain practices, but you know, honestly, I mean, we've really found that it makes it easier for me as the attorney. I feel like I can give you better service mm-hmm. and for you as the client, because you know exactly what you're paying from day one. And you know, you can always go up from there if you change your mind. And you know, and I mean, honestly, soon enough, if you had just thought you wanted to go with a larger package and wanted to come down before everything was drafted, you know, I mean, we can certainly work with that as well. Mm-hmm. But with that being said, I mean, prices, everything's going to depend on everybody's individual situation. Mm-hmm. But typically planning with us is somewhere between 2000 and, you know, I've seen around 8 or 9 when we get super fancy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, a flat fee, you're never going to pay anything that, first of all, you didn't feel was worth it and that you don't feel would be less than your family would pay otherwise.
Right.
Well, you know, if it's essentially just a process initially of sitting down, going through that inventory, figuring out, talking through exactly what would happen right now if we don't do any further planning. And this is the same if, you know, you were to come in with a current plan. Mm-hmm. You know, we'd sit down, we'd review that, what exactly is going to happen. And either you are going to be pretty cool with the situation as it is, and you're going to be like, great, thanks for the info, we're good to go. Or there's going to be something that you don't like about it.
Right.
And especially, you know, when we're starting from scratch, you already know there's something you don't like about it.
Yep.
So, and then, you know, as long as everything makes sense for both of us to move forward, we design a plan right there. And then it's pretty much at that point in time when we're talking about, you have a couple weeks to do a little bit of that homework, put together that inventory ahead of time. We meet and then we're looking at, you know, 3 to 4 weeks after that, that we'd sit back down and review and sign everything. And then another 3 to 4 weeks after that, you would pick up your binder and we would either, we'd touch base on moving forward with the funding process and getting all that taken care of for you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a couple of weeks to, from calling in to signing generally when you're working with our firm. And then, you know, that investment is really just going to depend on your individual situation.
Yeah. And I remember before we started, I thought like a couple $1,000 to do something that isn't going to happen for a long time. Like, why am I doing that? But I'm telling you, the relief that I felt that I, especially with the kids, just knowing the plan, mm-hmm. knowing what's going to happen, I don't remember which part, and I'm sure you'll know it, but we put in one of the documents that if we passed away, both of us, prior to the kids being 18, they didn't get, or when they turned 18, they didn't get like $100,000 in cash the moment they turned 18. It was like split out so that they couldn't be wild, crazy 18-year-olds
right.
and go drop all the cash. So
yeah.
I liked that too. Because I said like, okay, my 401k isn't worth a lot today, but maybe in 10 years it is. And my kids are 16 and 18 and 20. I don't want them getting $400,000 or, you know, whatever the value is.
Uh-huh.
So we split it out that way too. And that just made me feel like, okay, I got my kids and the people who survive me aren't going to be able to do something I wouldn't do.
Sure. And, you know, one of the other things is that it allows you to still provide for the things that you would be paying for were you alive.
Yep.
So like college, You can set aside a certain amount and allow certain distributions if your child is taking a certain number of credits,
mm-hmm.
or just between a certain number of ages.
Yep.
You can provide a certain amount for a wedding or a honeymoon or the down payment on a house.
Yeah.
So all the things that you as a parent might otherwise assist your child with while you are living, you can still have some of that, you know, control and influence and, you know, benefit your children in that way, even when you're not alive.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, so, we have a couple more minutes and I want to ask you about the business planning because I'm a business owner and I want to know what that's about.
Absolutely. So, I mean, again, it'll be very similar to what kind of we're talking about with trust planning, right? So if trust planning is building a business for your life, you know, we want to kind of apply that same sort of thinking to planning for your business. Want to make sure that you're set up legally and you have the appropriate structures because, you know, running just as a solo entrepreneur, you know, Becky Easton, attorney at law, everything that I do is in my own name, right? Mm-hmm. And something happens and they're going to come after Becky Easton, attorney at law. And you know, my own personal assets are all, you know, up in the air and available for some sort of challenge like that. Whereas when you operate the business behind that, you know, shield of an LLC or a C corp, then you're putting that barrier in between, you know, you and your assets. It really is ultimately, that's the key word when it comes to business planning is barriers. Mm-hmm. put up those boundaries between your personal assets and your business assets. You know, make sure you have some sort of legal structure set up, you know, an LLC, a PLLC, mm-hmm. if you qualify for that, a C corp, if, you know, you want to go big into getting incorporated and you have a bigger prospect. And then also looking then at your insurance, your finances, and your tax situation. And again, this is also another good way to be thinking just on your personal end as well. So what sort of insurance do you have? What's your business insurance, your malpractice insurance? Do you have, what's your homeowner's insurance look like? And do you have an umbrella policy? You know, all of those things that as a business owner might change slightly than what you would normally have as a non-business owner because, you know, you're using your home, especially now, right? We're all working from home, right? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So if a client comes over to, you know, sign documents one day and then they trip and fall, is my insurance policy going to cover that if they came over for a business meeting?
Yep.
So insurance, finances, making sure that you're you know, commingling assets. I think we hear about that all the time. It's a terrible idea. Don't do it. Make sure you have a separate bank account your business.
Yes. Say that louder.
Please do not put your personal funds and your business funds together.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, that's so the easiest way for, you know, even if you've done everything else right, let's say you're behind, you have the shield of the LLC, everything else is pretty split up, but it's, you know, you're a little messy with your finances. If someone comes at you, your personal assets are probably at risk there too.
Yep.
You know, so, and then all, you know, tax, just having that right planning, sitting down with, you know, a CPA and getting yourself set up and to figure that out. Do you want to be filing as an S corp if you're an LLC, is that going to make more sense for you?
Yep.
And there are a lot of little things that I think if you're not asking the right advisors, you don't know what you don't know, right?
It's so true. So. I have a company called 2 Cents Consulting and we're like virtual CFOs. If somebody doesn't know what the term CFO is, like we're a virtual director of finance. So helping people get their financial statements together. And so many times people come to us and their bank accounts are commingled and they don't have an LLC set up. And I'm like, you gotta start there. we gotta start with the basics, because you're just gonna put yourself into a world of trouble later on.
Yep.
And it's not their fault, right? They don't know. And every state's mm-hmm. a little bit different, and business insurance applies a little bit differently, but trying to help people find the right resources who can answer the questions is what it's all about. And I just started a coaching group recently for small businesses to like come in and ask questions to experts for 6 weeks. I may need to call and ask you to come in and give a little guest lecture for that, because so many people just don't understand exactly mm-hmm. what can happen if they get sued, what it takes down, you know, it right. takes down everything that have personally.
Sure. I mean, and that's another thing, like doing your incapacity planning mm-hmm. as a, you know, as an individual. I mean, it may not happen. You may not ever get sued as a business owner, but you know, it's pretty likely.
Yeah.
when it all comes down to it, it's actually pretty likely that you will be sued or threatened with a lawsuit. Yeah. And I think, you know, if you're listening to this as a small business owner and that has not happened to you, ask a few of your other small business owner friends and just see what their experience has been. And I think it's a lot more common than, you know, we talk about and that we know. And so getting prepared on the front end, knowing what happens, it's not, you know, I mean, it's not like planning to fail, you know, putting all of this in place isn't going to make you die. It's not going to make your business fall apart.
No, the opposite. You need to make sure it stands together during any time of disruption.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and I think also, like, in speaking to small business owners, what's going to make you the most successful is your ability to take a risk. Mm-hmm. And the better protected you are, and the more you know what will happen when the bad things happen, like the better you're able to step on out and take that risk and, you know, leap in and try things. Because otherwise, you know, when you're playing with personal assets and, you know, your home is on the line, if you make a mistake, you're going to be a lot less likely to take that big risk and be more successful, potentially.
And then in the same vein, how much is a typical investment ballpark for business planning?
It's probably right around the same. It probably starts about $3,500
and
up, again, just kind of depending on your situation and how in depth we want to get. We do, and that's, you know, kind of your full setup, having an attorney review everything mm-hmm. and draft it for you. We do have a fabulous paralegal who's able to, you know, I understand that, I mean, starting a business, sometimes you're starting it with nothing, you know, I mean, shoot, I started this law firm with nothing. So I wasn't paying anybody $3,500, when I didn't have any myself. So, you know, I get that. I've been there. And so, you know, we definitely are trying both with the estate planning and the business planning to incorporate other ways. Like, I've got a fabulous paralegal, Sarah Marie, who's able to, you know, step in and walk you through things and help you that way so that we can, you know, get that price point a little more affordable for that, you know, grassroots bootstrapping entrepreneur.
Love it. Very cool. Awesome.
So,
good information. I'm going to have to call you on the business side pretty soon. I think we're growing pretty fast. We're going to need to make sure we've got everything covered.
Yeah, I know. Well, I need to sit down with you anyway and work on my finances.
Yes, sir.
I didn't go to school to, you know, do my finances.
I hear that a lot. People are like, I hate it, but that's what I do for fun.
I know. I mean, I'm like, I can do it. But also, I mean, really interestingly, I was finally diagnosed with ADHD a few years ago. And the more I learn about that, the more I'm just ready to give up all the things that, like, I can do, but they stress me out.
Yes.
Or it's going to take me, like, I can figure it out, but do I need to spend that much time?
You got it, girl. It out? That's it. That is the premise of efficiency, bitch. Like, you got to just do what you're good at and give the rest to somebody else. You'll be fine. It's hard to let go of that control, though. So,
oh, so hard.
I get it.
So hard. I get it. And it, I mean, this has been 2021 is my year of no.
Mm-hmm.
I am not taking on things that make me, I'm basically Marie Kondoing, you know, my professional life.
Like
if it doesn't bring me joy and it stresses me out, I am not taking your case.
Yep.
Oh, these finances, I can figure them out, but it stresses me out.
Yes.
I will hire someone else.
Exactly.
You know, it's worth it. And it's also, I know for me, I struggle with like a scarcity mindset.
Yep.
You know, I'm like, oh my gosh, how much is that going to cost me?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I can afford it, but the stress not being on my heart.
Yeah. What does it cost you to do it is the thing, right?
Oh, yes. It costs me so much more than however much I spend otherwise.
I've talked about it on the show before, but I hired a personal assistant. I think like last October. And I've had a couple different ones, you know, just trying to test out different scenarios and stuff. But my current personal assistant, she does the podcast for me, like pretty much end to end. I love doing the interviews, but you got like a chain of emails from me, right? You're going to get a chain of emails from me after the show. None of that's me. I have help doing those things.
Yes.
She helps me put the show notes together. Like I could do it. And I did start the process and I handed it off. And it just makes the podcast so much more fun because now it's not a job. It's something I get to do and talk to cool people versus if I had to do all the emails. And I mean, there's a lot of little stuff that goes into doing the podcast. So it just, it gives me more joy to, it makes it the creative outlet that I was hoping for rather than making it a chore.
Yeah.
And
no, absolutely.
I think that's important. All right. I'm going to ask you two questions that have nothing to do with law, but I ask everybody these because they're important to me. What is the most important part of your morning routine? And do you have a morning routine?
Ooh, I have a morning routine that I don't always stick to.
So it's a morning sometimes.
It's a morning sometimes. And, you know, I do notice for sure that when I do stick to it, I am far happier.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the routine is essentially, I really enjoy morning news.
Hmm.
It's a little more lighthearted than, you know, your evening news or national news.
Right.
So I enjoy getting up, turning on the morning news and watching a little bit of that to see what's going on. There was a long time there where I was just like over the news.
Yeah.
And I don't know. And then I realized that when I wasn't watching it, I mean, I didn't even know what was going on like in town.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that was what I missed. Cause you know, you hear about the big national stuff, eventually. But I realized I was missing just that little, like what's going on, you know, is the ostrich festival happening this weekend?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. So yeah, but ultimately the more successful routine when I do it is to get up and actually spend some like quiet time and be able to sit for a while and just breathe, stretch, or like a full on yoga routine, depending on if I have one, you know, already pulled up on my phone. I guess
very good.
And again, just learning more about ADHD and the more I can have things like ready to go in the morning. So like knowing exactly which, you know, yoga podcast or not podcast, like YouTube video I'm going to watch and having that queued up and like ready to go, deciding my clothes. I mean, this was more of a thing back when I was going into an office. Deciding what to wear is decidedly less important now, but you know, the more things I can do the night before
yeah.
to set up, it just, I'm so much more successful in the morning.
I love it.
Get up, spend a little bit of quiet time in thought to myself, meditate, stretch, do some yoga, and then you can get into the day. And I'm far more successful when I do it that way.
Yeah, I agree. Me too. Me too. I like mornings. It's my thing. So I ask everybody it because I think it's really important.
I like mornings in theory, but I am definitely a night owl.
Me too. But I force myself to be a morning person because it feels good. Like,
yeah.
Don't get me wrong. It hurts every day when I get out of bed at 5 o'clock, but at 5:10, I'm glad I did it.
Yeah.
5 o'clock sucks.
Right.
Yes. 6 o'clock when I'm getting back. No, that's not true. I leave for the gym at like 5:55 and I get back at 6:50 and I'm thrilled that I've been up 2 hours and I've gotten, you know, so much done already. So.
Oh yeah. No, anytime I have to be somewhere like super early in the morning and, you know, you drive out and it's kind of, you know, there's not all that much traffic on the road and I don't know. It's just kind of nice. Mm-hmm. I'm like, these morning people really do have something going on. Too bad I'll never be one.
And then my other question's a little strange, but I'll give you a little backstory. So part of the Efficiency Bitch story that I'm writing and part of the reason for the podcast is to, as you heard in the intro, redefine and possibly end feminism. I'm a believer that the word feminist is often synonymous with man-hater and bitch, and really trying to change that perspective of women like me who are a mother and a hardworking person and a wife and do all the things. I am a feminist. I am a bitch, but I am certainly not a man-hater. And I'm raising a little man, you know, I love them. And I want my kids to see that. So I started doing some thinking and deciding, like, how did I get to be where I am today? And my story kind of starts with my grandmother being 10 years old during women's suffrage, my mother being 10 years old during the civil rights movement, me being 10 years old in the early 90s during, like, the Monica Lewinsky sex scandal and Anita Hill, Clarence Thomas stuff. And now my daughter is 10 years old while Kamala Harris is the first female vice president. So I ask my guests to reflect on something that may have happened to them, either culturally. You and I are the same age, so the story of the early 90s may be the same. But something that happened in your world or in the country or in your personal life that made you kind of who you are and you still remember or feel that?
Yeah, absolutely. I remember a few things, like you were saying. I mean, everything with Monica Lewinsky and that scandal, and then, you know, of course, you know, going on to, you know, Bush v. Gore shortly thereafter, I totally remember all those things, and just remembering, you know, looking back and now I think I appreciate them a little bit more, because I remember them happening, but they weren't necessarily like those flashbulb memories where you're like, oh, I know exactly where I was.
Right.
I know exactly how it changed my life. Like, it just didn't have quite that effect for me personally. Though I obviously remember them happening. And I was thinking about this question initially, and honestly, one of the things that really stands out that always sticks in my head about how I think about other people and I mean, just the world in general was from my mom when I was either probably 12 or 13. So we're in about the right age. And I was, she helped my dad coach my middle school soccer team. And because she taught there, she taught 7th and 8th grade English, and then my dad came in to help coach soccer and everything. And after it had to be after a game because it was a big jug of water, and instead of just dumping it out on the dirt to get rid of it, she like struggled to pick it up and take it over to a tree and dump it out to water the tree. Mm-hmm. And that, like, she didn't have to do that. I know, just dump it out and be done with it.
Right.
But instead, she chose to, you know, struggle a little bit herself to do benefit to the world.
Yeah.
And I think that that was always something that that I learned from an early age from my mom, was that, you know, is it, can you do better for the world, for other people? Is it that much of a difference, you know, to you, to alter how you act, you know? And I mean, I'm certainly, you know, I mean, I'm not saying you should absolutely step out there like to your detriment and go through a, you know, a bunch of ridiculous things in order to benefit other people, like to your own detriment. But I mean, if it's not that much difference, then, you know, do the better thing.
Yeah. I'd love that. That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, and that's always, I come back to that, a lot, and just like kind of, I see that image in my head and I'm like, yeah, you know, like do the better thing. I think that's always stuck with me. I just always wanted to help people.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know, always know I wanted to be an attorney, but, you know, I had this nebulous help people desire.
Awesome. Like,
been able to come around to, make it happen. So
that's awesome. Well, thank you, Becky. I appreciate it so much. Where can people find you if they are interested in learning more?
Absolutely. You can reach out to me. Our website is eastonlawpllc.com, eastonlawpllc.com. And then you can reach me at Rebecca@eastonlawpllc.com and give us a call at 480-999-4455.
Excellent. And I'll put that all in the show notes so it's easily accessible.
Awesome.
Cool. Well, thank you so, so much. I really appreciate you being on.
Of course. This was super fun.
Well, guys, that wraps it up. Thank you so much for listening. Keep spreading that EB love and remember to find me on Facebook at EfficiencyB. Until we meet again, be bold, be balanced, and stay blessed. See ya.